From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast Next. Yes, how about that? The last hour tonight, the week before Halloween. Get ready for this incredible program on Coast to Coast. A story that I find truly unbelievable. Scientists claim that the giant atom-smashing Large Hadron Collider is being jinxed from the future to save the world. In a bizarre sci-fi theory, a Danish physicist, Dr. Holger Beck Nielsen, and Dr. Masao Ninomaya from Japan claim that the LHC startup has been delayed. Nature is trying to prevent the device from finding the elusive Higgs boson, or what we call the God particle. They say that their math proves that the nature will ripple backward through time to stop the LHC before it can create the God particle, like a time traveler who goes back into time to kill his grandfather almost. European science agency CERN designed the world's biggest particle accelerator to shoot beams around a freezing 27-kilometer concrete ring underground near Geneva, smashing atoms together in search of the elusive God particle believed present at the Big Bang. The multi-billion-dollar machine, built over almost 20 years, was set to launch in 2008, but broke down after it overheated during a test run. Astronomers have announced a haul of planets found beyond our solar system. The 32 exoplanets ranged in size from 5 times the mass of Earth to 5 to 10 times the mass of Jupiter. They are finding them all over the place now. To date, planets outside our solar system, more than 400. Two girls who swam with pet turtles in a backyard pool were among 107 people sickened in the largest salmonella outbreak blamed on turtles nationwide. The 2007-2008 outbreak involved mostly children in 34 states. One-third of all these patients had to be hospitalized, and in many cases, parents didn't know that turtles can carry salmonella. Despite a 1975 ban on selling small turtles as pets, they continue to be sold illegally, almost 2 million in 2006. Heck, I remember when I was a kid, we would go to what was then Kresge in Detroit, which became Kmart, and we would buy these little turtles all the time. I don't recall us ever coming down with any kind of illness in those days. Marijuana smoking patients or their sanctioned suppliers should not be targeted for federal prosecution in states that allow medical marijuana, according to prosecutors, in a new policy memo issued by the Justice Department. Under the policy spelled out in a 3-page legal memo, federal prosecutors are being told it is not a good use of their time to arrest people who use or provide medical marijuana in strict compliance with state law. Now, the guidelines issued by the department do, however, make it clear that federal agents will go after people whose marijuana distribution goes way beyond what is permitted under state law or use medical marijuana as a cover for other crimes. Steve Fox, director of the State Campaigns for the Marijuana Policy Project, the nation's largest organization dedicated to reforming marijuana laws. Steve, let's get your reaction to this. First of all, it's a major step forward. I know a lot of people who cannot take pharmaceutical pain pills, so they've been on medical marijuana prescriptions. It has saved their lives, I think.
Yeah, certainly. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of patients around the country who use marijuana for medical reasons and get relief from whether it's chemotherapy or MS or whatever illness or treatment they may be suffering from. And this is a tremendous step forward. The Clinton administration, as well as the Bush administration, have stood in the way of state medical marijuana laws, the Clinton administration by trying to intimidate doctors, and the Bush administration by raiding medical marijuana facilities. And it's great to see that the Obama administration is willing to respect the state laws and let them operate, which they certainly should.
Well, this was a long time coming, Steve. Thank you so much. For a lot of people, again, who cannot take pharmaceutical prescription drugs and they need to rely on something like mandated medical marijuana, and it will make a world of difference for them. A bizarre story out of Detroit. A half marathoner, two other runners, died during the same marathon on Sunday. Three people. Daniel Langdon, 36 years old, he collapsed between the 11 and 12 mile markers of this marathon. Another person by the name of Rick Brown, 65-year-old of Marietta, Ohio, he collapsed real close to where Daniel Langdon went down. And a 26-year-old man collapsed a little bit later on after finishing the half marathon in 1 hour, 53 minutes. There were at least six medical stations in the area. They all rushed to the scene. People have never seen that before. Three runners dying in the same marathon. The chief of Iran's Revolutionary Guard has accused the United States, Britain, and Pakistan of having links with the Sunni militants responsible for a homicide bombing that killed five senior guard commanders and 37 others. Earlier Monday, an Iranian military official went as far as to raise the prospect of a possible military offensive into Pakistan against the group blamed for the attack. U.S. officials expect Afghan President Hamid Karzai to concede on Tuesday that he fell short of the 50% vote in August's election that he needed to win outright. It is unclear, though, whether that would lead to a runoff election with his nearest challenger. 8 years now, we've been in Afghanistan. Just so you know, the Soviet Union, they were there for 9 years. A clump of hair believed to have been trimmed from Elvis Presley's head when he joined the Army in 1958 has sold for $15,000 at a Chicago auction house. Among the 200 Elvis-related items up for grabs at the Leslie Hindman Auctioneers in Chicago was a shirt that once belonged to the king, which sold for $52,000. All the items had belonged to the late Gary Pepper, who ran a fan club and was a friend. Pepper, who had cerebral palsy, died in 1980. Up next, Michael Tesserian joins us. We are going to be talking about architects of control. What do they want to do with us? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Michael Tesserian is an expert on the occult histories of Ireland and America and is the author of Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, The Irish Origins of Civilization, and his latest work we're talking about tonight, Architects of Control, what they are trying to do to control all of us. Michael's with us on Coast to Coast. Michael, welcome back.
Hello, George. Nice to hear your voice. It's always a great pleasure to talk to you.
Did you feel a little threatened or uneasy when you were putting this latest work together? Because you're starting to step onto some toes here that you might not want to step on.
Oh, I don't mind stepping on them. And in fact, we have quite the opposite feeling. You know, we're tremendously enthused by this work. We've had to get a lot of other previous projects out of the way through the years so that I could get to this particular thesis. You know, I mean, it started off as an homage to Jim Keith and also to Ezra Pound. That's how it kind of was conceptualized. And so just that alone, sharing the information of those two gentlemen, you know, and kind of doing honor to them, you know, and of course we didn't get as far along that as I would have liked. But, you know, it was thrilling. And to be able to work in this particular age, don't forget, there's a spirit of awakening after all, you know, as dire as people think things are and as pessimistic as many become. You know, I have never lost sight of my colleagues at Blue Fire Film. You know, we don't lose the insight into that we are living in exactly the right time for the truth to be known about what's been going on, about the architecture of control and also the architects who've designed it. So to me, no, it's an absolutely thrilling experience, you know, the physical fact of doing it and just the chance to be able to get this work down in a modern medium, you know. And also don't forget, you know, we have the responses of people who've seen the first one, because of course the first one, Program One, has already been out for about, you know, 9 or 10 months. So we've had the feedback, and we've also seen just how turned on people are by what we're doing, you know, and that has also been very, very thrilling. So, you know, we just can't wait, you know, to keep on moving and keep on treading and continue with the series that we're doing, you know.
Yeah, but aren't you concerned that, you know, the more you try to publicize what's out there, this tyranny, this control, that somebody's going to try to stop you.
Well, of course, that is always you have to be rational, and you have to realize that, you know, these people are threatened, basically because they're a small group. You know, there are a small group. But, you know, one of my biggest teachings, actually, is about the weakness of mankind and the fact that, you know, they basically are not courageous souls living anymore. That's part of the reason why we have the state of affairs, you know, that we have in the world, you know. And I believe that. I believe you really have to stand up. You have to fall in love with the word no. And you have to really stand up for your rights. You know, coming from Ireland, we've always understood that freedom is never bestowed to you by your controllers or by your masters. You will have to fight for it. You will have to struggle for it. And you will also have to understand its absolute value when you have it. Saying that, of course, I must add that I don't think that we ever have been free. So when terms like freedom and liberty, independence and individualism are bandied around, as we know they are by people, in a way, that's taking a lot for granted, because as already the philosophers have said, that even if there's a single government anywhere in the world, man cannot be free. The mere existence of a government implies that man is not free. And there's even a term that, you know, the listeners tonight should go to the encyclopedia and look up, and it's a term called governmentality. There's actually a term, governmentality, and there's actually a second term, now that I'm on the subject, that is called a total institution. So people should just go to Wikipedia or one of the online encyclopedias and put in the word total institution and governmentality, and then think about what they're seeing on TV. Think about the control. You just mentioned yourself about how people are policing themselves, mm-hmm. how even merely talking or thinking. You know, we're under a strictly Orwellian system of control that is partly enforced by the corridors of power and the so-called establishment, but it's also co-enforced by each of us. By the people around us who forbid us. You know, David Icke has said many times, as the sheepdog, you will not be able to leave the square on which you're standing because the sheepdog is there to knock you back into line. What he meant was the people around us, the consensus trance. So yes, you have to be alert to the bigger, you know, big brother, which is what you're talking about, and the fear of retaliation from them and so forth and so on. But there's also the other concern of just the mindset and the consensus trance of our fellows who would rather sleep the Newtonian sleep and not wake up, not get in touch with what is real about themselves, who will fall for the talismanic words of these leaders, you see, all of these different ways that they
tell us. They'd rather stick their heads in the sand, Michael, wouldn't they?
Yes, they do. And, of course, in one way you can understand it, because it's people buy into what's coming down. They buy into New World Order. They buy into Global Village because of the way it's sold. It's sold to us through talismanic words. A nice sheen is put on it. They're constantly pulling the rug to make everybody so very insecure that then we buy into that, you know, and we tend to feel that that is the right way to go, you know. So it's also a sort of a marketing down through the years, this constant drip feeding that with these talismanic words that they're using constantly to try and market this thing and sell it to us, and at the same time make our own lives, you know, so riddled with anxiety that we kind of buy into it. But never to forget that man is also his own police force. You know, we're double and triple checked. Even when we're just going to a cinema, you're carded when you're even buying a coffee, you know, from places like Starbucks. I mean, you know, we're ticketed. We have bylaws and bylaws and bylaws, and nobody even fights those little laws, which are totally extortionate and completely confiscatory. So we have in-your-face social and statewide, you know, basically forms of colonialization that people need to wake up to and handle that before we can even go further up the fractal and further up the ladder. Of course, my work does go further up the ladder. I'm always wondering about the architects of control at the highest level, and my work is to try and, you know, elucidate and illuminate that for people so they get an understanding of not only how old this architecture of control is, but, you know, some more of its details and its sort of its anatomy. But right on the surface level, right in your daily life, you know, the way the media presents certain things, the way people have this consensus trance, the way children are taught in school, the way the medical profession, you know, is running around circumcising children, and all the other injustices that exist with animals and just so many other things in our own environment, you see. So there's an entire matrix of this. And it's very, people can get pessimistic about it, or they can actually start rejoicing about some of the incredible, you know, developments and progress that is, in fact, being made on these levels. We are in an incredible time, and I never lose sight of that, because I must add that in my personal life, you know, and I know this is very very much the same thing for you, George, is that I do not see this discovery or this journey as separate from a man's spiritual progress. They're not two separate things.
They're definitely related.
They are definitely related. So, and I've never lost sight of that. So it's not just something I do. It's just a job. It's very much part of my own spiritual development, my learning curve, my learning process, my awakening to what is going on. And I feel sure from responses from people, you know, that they feel pretty much the same way too. But it doesn't mean that then you negate fear and jump into the lion's mouth or don't have a rational understanding. We must have that also and must be aware that, you know, didn't somebody say in South Africa, an activist, I think it was Steve Biko, don't take on the cause of the oppressed until you want your... unless you're willing to meet the oppressor. So, of course, there is a price to pay. But the thing is, I'm willing to pay that, whatever the price is, because there's no price too high for truth and for freedom and for justice.
Michael, you say something very interesting, that the rise of modern science and technology is tied into an ancient alien agenda. Explain that.
Well, that's going back... that's definitely the background to Architects of Control, what we're doing now. I always frame it, of course, by... well, what it is, it's looking at the same thing. It's looking at the question of the Nephilim. It's the question of the fallen angels, the genetic hybridization that I talked about, the breaking through the Stargate, you know, the nuclear detonations on the moon recently are part of this. And I framed that in the Atlantis book about the fact that even these Nephilim have even pan-dimensional allies, that they basically are in league with some very dark forces that they're in the ancient text, they're called the Cosmocrates. In the Gnostic tradition, they're called the Archons, you know, and Christians would refer to them as sort of demonic principalities, all of which is correct. So this ancient agenda is pertinent to today because, as I point out in the Atlantis book, these Nephilim were, in fact, scientists. They were people who were very up with technology, but in the Great War that ensued about 13,000 years ago, their technology was mostly lost to them, and this includes... you know, cybernetic sort of technology and also very much computerized technology. This is all written in the legends and mythologies, as I've elaborated in the book. But the loss of the hardware explains where we are today, because the Silicon Age, even the Industrial Age, and certainly the Technotronic Age, which these particular types of, sorcerers today in the technical field are working towards, is the rebuilding and the restoration of an ancient technology that was, you know, lost in ancient times. And we need to look at the symbolism that some of these corporations are using. We need to look at the ad copy. We need to be conscious of the movies that are also sort of whistleblowing a lot of what we're talking about. I go into that a lot in my other work. And then we start to see, like, for instance, the symbol of the serpent, you know, and we tie a lot of things together with the ancient past and the modern technology. So we're living actually now in the end game of this technological agenda, which... it's very, very fascinating, you know, to look at. And, of course, like with these latest detonations on the moon, you know, I've elaborated that ties into the breaking of the Stargate. And it's about this particular coterie, or let's say the descendants of the ancient Atlantean coterie, you know, trying to vacate the planet Earth. And there's severe consequences if, in fact, that should ever be attained. And they let us know through the movies and through various other means that they're doing this.
Vacate as a safety measure, or vacate because there's something else going on?
Well, there's a lot going on, and of course, their vacation may actually take two forms. In the Atlantis book, I expressed that they just want to simply get out, you know, because they've been interred here, they've been locked here for thousands of years, and these were people who once did roam the cosmos. So, of course, they want that privilege again. Nobody who's had that kind of technology and who's been able to come and go, you know, throughout the universe is going to want to be tied down to one planet for a long period of time. So part of it is just the freedom that they want to be able to vacate the planet. But because it's been so slow, because they're not able to do that right at this time, it might be another phase. And that phase might be that they actually move physically to the moon, that they may even start erecting bases on the moon so that they can then watch the devastations that take place on this Earth. That's a possibility. They really want to leave completely, but they may even start now, soon, building even, you know, elitist-type communes. As so many science fiction shows have already pointed this out, it can happen. Or there may be even some other kind of space station type of, you know, setup while these people continue to pollute the Earth and use it, you know, just like the toilet that they've basically been doing for so many thousands of years.
Michael, when we come back after the break, you talk about the fact that human consciousness is man's problem.
Yeah.
And a huge problem. So we'll see how that ties into this. We're talking with Michael Tesserian, His latest work is called Architects of Control. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. Later on in the program tonight as well, pre-Halloween, as we talk with a couple hunters that are going out there looking for ghosts. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Michael, are they making Manchurian candidates out of all of us? And if they are, how are they doing it?
Well, not making it. They've succeeded. It's been a tremendously long plan, you know, that kind of colonization. Because colonization, colonialization, is not just something that happens physically with military action. It's a war on consciousness. And I've said that over and over again. And we sort of, I guess, it goes without saying that that is happening, but in Architects of Control, what we do is we look at also what is it in man that wants to identify with his controllers, you know, because we talk in the Atlantis book about man's psyche being fragmented because of multiple levels of trauma, not less the interference with his own biology genetically, but also from the Earth catastrophes that followed and the famous War of the Gods and all of this. And this has basically shattered man's consciousness. His ego, I've always described as sort of the ghost that rose from the grave of the self. So we're not dealing with man right now as a whole animal, you know, as a whole creature, as a person who's connected either to himself or to nature or to the divine. So it makes it very easy for, you know, a particular coterie of control to work on his mind in that way. And also the splitting that happened, this is well known to psychologists, that when there is severe trauma, even today, if it's in an individual, or if, like I'm insisting, that it happened on a universal global level, well, if man is divided from his own unconscious, he's broken and fragmented within. And then, say, the establishment also create a lot of trauma and anxiety from without. Well, you can just imagine the kind of trouble that the, you know, the normal human waking ego consciousness is in. It's under a very fragile state. And they want that. In fact, I believe that the establishment has actually made hay out of the fact that man was traumatized in ancient times. They don't seek to fix it. They want it. They want man to be inwardly in a very fragmented and mutilated state. Because then when they add the external, you know, pressures through economy and wars and rumors of wars and all other kinds of things that they impose upon us, they have a completely, you know, controllable sort of slave. All that's happening now is that slave has been offered more decoration. It's not that we bash technology in the work we're doing, but we are saying that if that technology is in the hands of psychopaths, which is what I believe it is, then we have a severe, you know, then we have a severe, you know, severe problem. But I mean, we're not bashing technology. It takes technology to mix colors for an artist. It takes technology to make a piano or a guitar, to make planes fly, you know, and to heal the sick. So it's not, and I mean, look, we're talking over a telephone right now, and look at the brilliance of the internet. And there's many even spiritualists have said that the internet and that kind of technology, the data space, the cyberspace, is nothing but an extension of man's cerebral cortex anyway. There's something beautiful and organic and biological and fantastically, you know, so man is an incredible inventive quality. These things are marvelous, what we've discovered about the quantum universe and so forth and so on, and the miracle of the body with people like Bruce Lipton and stuff like that. So it's not that technology is bad. In fact, it's excellent. It shows man's genius. But when those forces are manipulated or fall into the hands of the controllers who want to use man as their personal mannequin and who literally think of Homo Atlantis as their creation, you see, then we have a problem. But in the modern work that we're doing right now and why we're so enthused about it is because we're starting to look at the same, shall we say, the same vase, the same painting in a different way. We're dealing with the same content that I've spoken about before in my other work, but we're looking at it in a slightly different way. You know, I mean, the painter Cézanne, you know, painted dozens and dozens of the same mountain in different light. You know, Monet did it with a single tree. He painted the same tree, you know, literally dozens of times, and it was a different tree because the light was different and the complexion was different. And when we're talking about this great mystery of conspiracy and what's been going on in the world, the person who's studying that needs to be like that. They need to have that kind of an eye where they examine it, they walk around it, they see it from all sides. They don't get fixated on a particular, you know, prejudicial understanding. They keep reviewing it, keep pulling it out again. Look at it under a different light. Look at it under a different perspective. There's many ways to look at this particular, you know, creature because it's fascinating. And the establishment figures, they hide themselves. Their agenda is not open. It's, you know, they sort of, I always describe them as tigers in the long grass. And therefore, you need to track them. And that often has to be done by night. And you have to get very aware of their weaponry and what kind of, you know, abilities that they have because they've been studying us, you see.
Well, what do they want, Michael? What do they want?
Well, first and foremost, they want this identification. When they remember, because you really can't force everyone into control of shackles by gunpoint. It's much better to work on them psychologically so that you have their identification. And the working for the human being, you know, weakening him so he's not tied into his own selfhood, then we lean on the handrails that are provided by these big fatherly figures, you know, and that's what basically they're up to. Because once you have that complicity, and see, as I said in the beginning, man maybe doesn't want freedom. Maybe he's never had it. And maybe, you know, something even worse, maybe he doesn't even really want it. Maybe what he wants is freedom from freedom. Maybe what he wants is sort of like a decorated and furnished incarceration. And the leaders operate on that level. They go, listen, we know you're anxious. We know you got problems. But we're here to hand you technologies and virtual realities and cyber purgatories and all sorts of bells and whistles to make your incarceration, you know, eventful. And the same thing is the way they present this global village. They're always insinuating that man is imperfect. He needs to be fixed, you know. And I've always described these people as sort of that's the psychopath. The psychopath cannot see the holarchy. He can only see the hierarchy. That's why they use hierarchical models as their symbols, like, for instance, the pyramid. That's because that is the very symbol, the very emblem of the psychopath who cannot see the wholeness. He cannot see the perfection. He wants to put earrings on the Mona Lisa. He wants to fix what isn't broken. And this is what we're looking at right now in this particular series, as well as the fact of how this identification takes place and how, because of an age-old trauma, the human race right now is becoming as alien, or in other words, dehumanized, as his creators. He's actually identifying with them to the point that his own humanity is actually, you know, he's tiring of his own humanity. And this is a fascinating study because it's really blends in psychology with psychology and certainly the conspiracy. And I know for a fact that the DVD we're working on now, the series, is the first ever attempt to join psychology, the principles of psychology, with conspiracy. So it's totally breaking new ground and looking at the conspiratorial, you know, sort of sphere of knowledge in a completely different way than has been done. We're not pointing fingers anymore. You see, we're not saying, hey, what are they doing over there? What are they doing on the other side of the hill? What are they planning for little old us? You know, we're actually looking at, wait a minute, what is it that we are doing? Because we are the many, they are the few. What is it that we are doing to land ourselves to any kind of tyranny, whatever it is, that this has not been normally done before in this movement of the alternative research movement, you know? And it's time that we started looking at it. We've been doing it, and we've been getting great responses from people, you know, who are starting to get around this paradigm.
Have you ever thought, though, Michael, that maybe we as masses want to be controlled, that
I'm
we need
it? I'm convinced of it. And I think that ties into many questions. And, of course, many of the listeners of a show like Coast to Coast and many of the people who email me are not falling into that category.
Often. No, I agree with that.
That has to be stated, you know, very clearly. But you see, obviously, we look around at the people today and we see this vacancy. We totally see this complicity. We see them egging it on. We see them voting it in. Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote 3 massive books on the gulag. And one of the things he emphasized constantly is how hundreds of thousands of prisoners were controlled by, you know, nothing more than a dozen guards. And were even marched to their death, and all other sorts of terrible, terrible injustices were taking place up in, you know, Siberia during the communist period. And he could never understand how people just moved around like sheep, taking these orders when they easily could have overpowered the guards. Then you fast forward to the Bush election, and you think about the complicity of people when this guy just, you know, gets inaugurated, and the whole scam of his election, and so many other kinds of injustices that take place, both on the mini level socially and on the macro level. And you start to see this complicity. And that complicity is the colonialized mind. That is the result of the war on consciousness. And unless people like myself, teachers, point this out, how this dynamic works and how people lend themselves to this, you know, we won't have the tools to discover how this works. The power is psychology, because the leaders are up on that. They are absolutely.
It's going to be very interesting, Michael. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in Afghanistan with the self-anointed president that we put in there. And, you know, it's obvious they had 1 million fraudulent votes there. That knocks him down under 50%. Let's see what happens now. I wonder if he's going to simply say, okay, I give up. Let's have a new election. I concede like they think he's going to. I'm not so sure he's going to go that easily.
No, of course not. And they've done this from the time of the British Empire, from the advent of the Second World War, dividing Europe. You know, like you cut up a cake or you piece together a jigsaw puzzle. And they've done it historically, and they've done it sociologically, and they're doing it politically. They're doing it with America. I mean, the American experiment. I mean, can you imagine what has been going on in 200 years here to bring the greatest country in the world to this particular state of apathy?
Well, why are people rolling over, Michael? Why are they rolling over? Why do they want to be controlled? Why do they want this to happen?
Trauma.
What do you mean, trauma?
Trauma. I believe it's connected historically. That's why my work goes into so much of what happened in the past. Although I always tell people that my interest is what's going on right now. The traumatized victim person is absolutely susceptible to control. And remember, you don't call in a gardener when you want your car engine fixed. If you want the right answers to questions, you have to go to the right teachers and the right answers. And you have to ask the right questions as well. And because people have been leaving consciousness at the door, they haven't studied it correctly. They, therefore, do not have the manual to fix the problems that are. We know that there are these problems. But if you keep going to the false teachers or the wrong teachers and the wrong teachings, in my opinion, you know, don't expect things to ever change. It's as simple as that. The secrets of all that's happening in the external world, and I mean all of it, everything that happens in society, and you don't need to be Wilhelm Reich to work this out, that consciousness affects matter and consciousness affects society. Hitlers and people like that are voted in. All forms of tyranny are a manifestation of what's going on in the temperament of the human psyche. And, you know, I'm not the first to have said this, but certainly within the conspiracy movement, we need to revamp this idea and get around this instead of stop pointing fingers. And also, what do I mean by pointing fingers? I mean, stop dilly-dallying in the political game. In other words, fighting this giant, fighting this Goliath with the weapons that the Goliath has provided for you, namely the political arena, in which you may have a certain amount of topical, you know, developments and a bit of progress, but it's completely useless. It doesn't bring down, you know, the establishments of control. It doesn't affect the major architecture of control. They've handed us the weaponry, so-called, to fight them. And we have to be suspect of that. It
Michael,
hasn't achieved
these
anything
people,
in the past, and it won't achieve anything in the future.
These people, though, are brilliant. They have learned how to break people down. I mean, right now, most people are concerned about their jobs and their income and paying a house payment or, you know, taking care of their families. That's what they're afraid of right now. That's what they're petrified of. And they have learned how to break that person down, how to cripple him, and how to make him so afraid that they can manipulate him and tell him to do anything they want. And that's what's happening.
And let's never forget how old that game is, you know, through hook or by crook. You know, they use the double-headed eagle. This is a situation in which either they're going to be controlled by monarchy or by theocracy. And theocracy is better because it works on the emotions of man. It ties back into what I'm saying about the inner complexes that people have. They are able to destabilize us. That's what's happening right now because you know, Henrik Palmgren and myself are big advocates that there's another boom coming. We've said it many times. We've been filming all over the world, and when we came to America this time in June to film in the Bay Area, we saw much evidence of it, not in people because, as you say, they're traumatized and they're worried about this and that in the domestic level, but we are absolutely convinced that they're ready to start another Silicon Revolution, this time sort of a greenish-type revolution. And we even know how they're going to do it. You know, I don't know if we can go into that right now, but
yeah, go ahead. We've got some time. How are they going to do it? What's up?
Well, I believe that they're going to, you know, bring about a certain kind of technology. It's going to be sort of a recurrence of what happened back in the 80s with the Silicon Revolution and the laptops and the whole sort of, you know, Steve Jobs, stroke Bill Gates, you know, thing that happened in the Bay Area. And I believe the Bay Area will be another location for this. It probably will start actually in Canada, I believe, or even in the East. And I believe that the front men for it, the people that they put forth as the sort of Pied Pipers, will not be white Gentiles from America like Steve Jobs and all these people like Bill Gates. They'll be more like a Deepak Chopra type who is going to come forth maybe from India even or China and start talking in almost sort of mystic terms. So there'll be a sort of a blend between the modern technologies and various kinds of technologies that will interface with what we have now. But the sales point will be a sort of veneer of spirituality. It's coming. There's many orgs that actually exist in the world who've been working on this for a very long time. And this is what they're going to insinuate as the new step forward. And then, of course, people will jump into it because what have they done 10, 15 years before? Pull the rug from under everybody, upset everybody, you know, with these fake crises that are actually manufactured. If anyone doesn't know that, they need to know it, that all these economic catastrophes are purely engineered, and they're engineered for a reason, and that is to bring people down to a repressed and, you know, create these artificial recessions, which they've done throughout the millennia, throughout the decades. And then that sets people up, you see, to be, again, just like it was back in the 80s, very materialistic, very narcissistic, very focused on their own personal welfare in a very greedy and selfish way. There will be a new overclass, you see. Of course, the richer will always get richer. But what they're hoping for now, in the meantime, what they're doing is they want a lot of people to drop through the net. And unfortunately, the people who are getting the most anxious and the people who are getting very trepidatious, they're the victims. They are the ones who do not see the big picture. They don't understand what's happening. They're like tasered. And so they will fall through the cracks in exactly the same way as what happened back in 1939 with the so-called faux depression that was, you know, that was manufactured for people to erase one set of the working class so that a new technoclass can come through. If you look at what I'm saying, you'll even realize that the Silicon Revolution of the 80s is actually just that was just the hors d'oeuvre. The new boom is to come, and the new boom will have a different kind of decadence connected to it. It will have good things as well as bad, but it's all engineered. And you always know this because a few years before, they upset everything and put people into complete meltdown, both psychologically and financially, you see, in order to clear the way for the next program that they're going to unleash. And we saw this in the Bay Area. We examined the situation and we've seen it. And you might as well refer to it as the green Silicon Revolution that's coming. It ties into the whole big agenda from higher up.
Well, if you want to catch a fish, Michael, you don't reel it in really fast. You do it in a very nice, methodical manner, and that's what they're doing to people.
Well said.
Bringing them in.
Well said. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, behind that, as we know, lies the deeper forms of technomancy, which is a form of necromancy, is what technology really is in the hands of these psychopaths. There's a lot. Not only did we talk about, you know, the fact that this is tied into something off-world, the pan-dimensional sort of pact that took place in ancient times, but, you know, there's all sorts of programs. I mean, even the great Russian author, Nikolai Fyodorovich, he even predicted that modern science will be necromantic. It will have the ability to raise the dead. He didn't talk about DNA specifically because it wasn't in his language at the time, you know, when he wrote. But a lot of pundits, a lot of people who have had mystical vision and prophetic vision, including Tennyson, including people like Edgar Cayce, they've all predicted this, that when it comes, it will have some very, very demonic aspects to it. You yourself talked about the statues and the symbolism that is being raised all over the world, not only in the Far East, in Kazakhstan and other places, mm-hmm. you know, but we've been researching all of this. We've got to keep our eyes on the movies and the ad copy and the news broadcasts and the magazines, because they're always, you know, sort of massaging this, and they're preparing mankind for this, telling this will be good, this will be better, we're marketing it. And they use these talismanic words to keep you completely divorced from your own center. These controllers like nothing better than words like we and us and our, in order to get you completely divorced, you see, from what your own primal, instinctual, true needs are and what your own practical, you know, spiritual sort of destiny is. And this is the perfectly controlled, utterly, you know, unfortunately, it comes right down to this is their brave new world of smiling depressives, you know.
Do you see the divide between the haves and the have-nots getting wider and wider and wider?
That is for sure. There's no doubt about that. And of course, there is actually a sub strategy to completely, absolutely obliterate what we would know as the middle class. This is reflected in the downsizing of the heavy industry in America and so forth and so on, you know, and of course, not to mention the outsourcing of jobs and the unbelievable barrage of immigration and all of these kinds of things. And people do see the symptoms, but they're not aware of who's actually, you know, working on this. There's people, you know, these, and don't forget, George, that these people are happy to tell you, my work rests almost entirely on going to their own works. These Delgados and these Alvin Tofflers, right, and these Kevin Warners and these Ray Kurzweils and all the rest of them are happy to tell you that they're working towards the psycho-civilized society. You know,
Let's talk about some solutions when we come right back. Architects of Control.